Aloha, Mud Babies, pod people, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew, here in the Remasculate Studios basement. The basement. That's what I said, basement. Sitting with comic and band. We'll talk about that, too.
Yeah. Band,
comic, Ben Roy. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing terrific. How are you doing, man?
I'm cool. But your first time here in the studio. What do you think? I think you're overwhelmed by the junk.
You are near a hoarder. You could really, I think A&E needs to come by and see what you've done down here. No, but you have a weird assortment of stuff, though. So
like my Hawaiian corner over there.
I like that. I love tiki stuff. That gets me going. That's cool. It is a lot of, but it's very organized. You're like pretty organized person.
Yeah, it's kind of like what I need something out of the Hawaiian section. I need something out of the Halloween section.
The tiny princess chair that you have there, random accoutrement that you
have. Right. Just and that goes with the Farrah Fawcett head that's behind it. If you see that, that was one of those things you could comb the hair and put makeup on.
That's creepy. You should put that in the princess chair. Do you lift a lot? Or are you big working out?
I'm trying to get into working out.
You look fit.
I've lost weight. Trying to get fit. After you don't get up at 3:30 in the morning to do radio anymore, you have to find something to do with your life.
Right.
And you're doing the same thing. You've gotten much healthier. You've lost weight and worked out, right?
Well, I was a big fat ass for a while, but that's all. But that was just something I had. I didn't do it. I don't think I didn't set out to lose weight. I have such bad anxiety. I have anxiety attacks, and so I didn't want to take drugs. So one thing that was recommended was
gym. Just work out.
Hit the gym and burn off all that garbage.
Yeah, that was the same thing my doctor had said to me, because I don't drink or any of that kind of stuff and didn't want to get addicted to stuff.
Yeah.
And she goes, you should work out. Go to the gym. It's a great stress reliever. If nothing else, just start walking just to clear your mind and your body.
Yeah, it's amazing. When it gets in there and squeezes that gland, and after you work out, you feel like you can tolerate a lot more. And I get real irritable real easy, and then my anxiety comes out. And so, I'm big into the mixed martial arts. I love jiu-jitsu and boxing, and I like CrossFit.
Now, have you ever had to use any of that at any point? Have you ever had to seriously kick somebody's ass?
No. I mean, I punched somebody in a thing that happened at a bar one time. My buddy got into a fight, and then his buddy got in, and I just punched him. And then most of the time it gets split up by everybody involved. It ends up in that, where you're...
Hey, dude, calm down. Chill.
Yeah. A waitress ends up getting hurt the most out of all of it. But I've never been a real fighter. That's probably where my sense of humor came out. My friends were all big, barroom heroes and brawlers and
right.
stuff.
But
like
using
that.
And not having that knowledge, because I remember as a kid thinking karate would be great, to know karate. And you watch those movies, and nobody would ever jack with me again if I just... So if you ever at any point just wanted to use something you learned...
I don't think I've ever wanted to use it. We've talked about this. A bunch of people that I know that have gotten into MMA or anything like that. After you, I think you have that in you, and before you go in and you have this feeling like I can't wait. And then once you go to a gym, you get that beaten out of you. You realize that there are a lot of people way stronger, and how much fighting hurts. And now I think my will to fight is so much less. Even now that I know a little bit more of how to defend myself.
Yeah, I went to an MMA fight at the Grizzly Rose and watched the cage, the match. And it just seems like the whole club and the whole area becomes such testosterone-driven.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's going to be more fights outside the ring
totally.
Than inside.
Totally. You can tell, those people that come in with shirts with swords on them and, they're big dudes. And those guys in the crowd scare me more. I have a lot of friends that are fighters. Nobody in the UFC, but people who fight, locally in the local in Pride or Fight to Win and whatnot. And they're some of the nicest dudes. You know what I mean? They're I've not met anybody that I've been that guy's an asshole. He's got a chip on his shoulder. Most of them have tempered their ego from getting beat up pretty bad.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, though, the bigger you get and the fact that you know that you could just kick anybody's ass at one point, just anybody, you're kind of I don't care. What are you going to say to me? What are you going to, you know?
And that's the thing. I'm not a big guy. I'm not a, you know, I'm pretty thin and now. So I'm way more into grappling and the jiu-jitsu side of it. I mean, if I just train the jiu-jitsu and.
Well, the last time I saw you before, you were losing weight for a wrestling gig. You were eating carrots like crazy.
Yeah. I was doing a tournament. Hilarious story. First time in a grappling tournament. I get in the ring, pumped. I square off. You know, we get into the clinch. We're kind of like feeling each other out. And he goes to throw me. He kind of got on the outside. And he went to throw me. And I kind of went to counter. And I just tore the muscles between my ribs and just kind of crumbled. And so I laid there for a minute. He didn't like submit me. He just was kind of like, he was trying to figure out what the hell I was doing, because all of a sudden, and then
he's just down all of a sudden.
Yeah. And my coach is like, gotta move, improve position, you gotta move. And then he's like, you gotta move, dude, you're not moving. And I'm just like, and I tapped, and then the medics came over, and I tore the intercostal muscles between my ribs. But there were only three guys in my division. And so I ended up winning a bronze medal. And so they called me up, and the photo was me holding this sad bronze medal and my head down, clutching my rib.
In pain.
Yeah.
In.
And it was so sad. It was like, I didn't even want it. I was like, I don't want to go out there. And they're like, just go get your friggin' medal. And I'm like, I don't want that thing.
So you're a bronze medal injury.
Yeah. It was like a minute and some odd in. And the kid was good. You know, I mean, it would have been a good role. Like, I was excited. Because we squared off and couldn't take each other down for probably about a minute.
Had you done this kind of stuff before, earlier? Or is just lately you said, I'm going to get into something?
I was just a kind of a pothead and a skater when I was younger. And then when I got out of drinking and stuff like that, I started taking jiu-jitsu, Japanese jiu-jitsu, a while ago. But then, but when I quit drinking, I needed something to vent. You know, right. You become addicted to something else. Of course. Yeah.
It's an addictive personality.
Right.
So I don't even think all the time that drinking is the problem.
No.
I think it's the personality.
Yeah, it's whatever. That's what I latched onto. And I think people, when jiu-jitsu and working out doesn't latch back, you latch onto it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas alcohol, you latch onto it, it latches back onto you.
Right.
You know?
And then the leeches.
Like, yeah, exactly. And you're like, I can't. Oh, okay. Well, now you're real into me as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's what, you know.
Well, what is your take on people that want to say that alcohol, when they talk about their disease of alcohol, or the, I have an allergy to alcohol? Because I always have a thing with that of, no, I'm not really sure you do.
I think it this way, and this is just what I learned in treatment, and it works for me because it keeps me. I think that you don't get to choose how you react to poisoning yourself. When you drink, you're pouring poison down your face, and that's what you're doing. And for a while, I thought, well, screw it, I can control this. I can only have one or two. But what they tell you is that you're creating a chemical reaction in your body, and what happens is out of your control. When you, just like if you were to sit here and swallow a bottle of turpentine, you don't get to control what that does to your liver and your brain. After it gets in you. And I think that that's what's allowed me to understand myself, is that I've repented and paid my price for all the shitty, awful things I did when I was drinking, or at least partly. I've apologized to a lot of people.
Have you walked around and done your steps?
There's been a lot of apologies, yeah. And I think that what allows me to not drink anymore is knowing that it's out of my control.
Yeah.
You know, because I think we all have addictive personalities. You see what's happening with food and people's addictions to food are so widely accepted, and to
sugar.
Alcohol and sugar.
Sugar.
I mean, God, I love sugar now.
Sugar.
I didn't like it before.
I was told that when I quit drinking. That was like you're going to get a thing for either sugar, cigarettes, or coffee. Those are going to be like, you're just going to.
You got two out of three, right? You're a big coffee drinker?
Yeah, coffee and sugar. And now I'm working really hard to get rid of the sugar.
Yeah.
Because I can do decaf coffee and still pretend.
Yeah.
But just sugar is just like, oh, pies, cakes, hard candy.
Your Instagram feed is always you with these shots of these beautiful, like, craft coffees. You're like, so like, how much friggin' coffee do you drink?
Oh, probably four or five, six a day. But just coffee. I mean, some might be decaf, some might be real.
Yeah.
I love good coffee.
Yeah, I can respect that. I can't do caffeine. It makes me want to shit. You know, like I have to.
Like immediately? Like,
oh, yeah. Like I'm immediately like, Mom, my stomach's not doing good.
So when's the last time it hit you so bad you thought you might not make it?
Oh, I mean, I've sharted a few times because of
not on stage.
I know enough to not, but I had like a, this is so stupid. I went to Sam's Diner, like Sam's number Sam three, number three. Downtown.
Might have been Sam's number two.
Yeah, exactly. It, and I ordered an iced tea and I asked if it was decaf because I don't know why, but I'm real sensitive to caffeine. So I don't drink it a ton because of my anxiety and stuff. And I just ordered it. And she was like, oh, yeah. Gave me one of those tall, like, diner cups.
Yeah,
those,
the big, giant plastic tumbler.
The red one. The one that you're always excited about when it comes to you. I drank that. And then I drank another one right after that. And it had a lot of caffeine. There was not. She didn't. When I was like, is there caffeine in this?
And no.
She was like, she was like, oh, we don't have decaf tea. And I was like, you just said that I just asked for a decaffeinated tea. And she's like, oh, I don't know why I told you that. We don't have that. I've drank like two cups of this, like two of those.
Bitches. I hate those bitches. The same thing has happened to me because you ever been out at night after a show and you go to a Waffle House or whatever and you go, you know, give me a decaf. Like, I want a decaf coffee.
Right.
And you're laying in bed. It's 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, you just go out. Like, you can hear the hum of your brain cranking out thoughts.
So I'm talking to my girlfriend, Janet, Miss Thang, I call her on the show. She used to waitress. And she told me, she goes, yeah, people would say that. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Just here's your coffee. And I go, do you know what you do when you do that to people? She goes, well, I never thought about it. But now that you say, she goes, I feel horrible. Yeah. Because I go, there's a difference between decaf and regular. It's not a just, yeah, whatever.
And especially after a comedy show where you're already the whole reason, at least for me, the whole reason I've gone out to a Waffle House or a diner afterwards is because that decompression is weird after a night of shows. You can't like go right to bed because you're still flying. You know what I mean?
The adrenaline from your body, everything is going.
And you've had two, three great shows depending on the night and you're like, bang, you know, like, but you went from being surrounded by a whole club of people to now I'm totally by myself.
Right.
And I need to wind down. I'm going to grab some food, maybe search on a computer or read or something. And you try and then somebody jacks
goes, here, have a line of caffeine.
You're trying to call the club. Let's get a fourth show.
I'm still up. Let's do one of those. Blast it out on Twitter. We can do this.
But nobody knows who I am. They don't know Ben Roy, but yeah. So
yeah. I hate that.
Yeah.
The whole thing, like you were just saying, of going to a show, having a great show, and then being alone.
Yeah.
How are you dealing? Like, I was just telling this to the girlfriend a while ago. I just did an interview because I'm doing a show at a theater in Pennsylvania next month.
Yep.
And did a newspaper interview, and it was great. And I turned around, and I'm cleaning up a dog accident. So you go from, yeah, I'm about to be a star, to, oh, thank you, God, for reminding me. I have to pick up dog shit.
Ah, yeah. So that to me is different. That's like having family or somebody to ground you, because that like it's real easy having people cater on you hand and foot, you know, when you're out on the road and people pick you up. What do you need? Do you need to go to the store? Do you need food? Do you need they're all like so concerned with your well-being that when I love, like, I don't love it, but when I come home, I'm just shithead dad, you know, like, so immediately, like, my son's like, they're like, wake up call. I don't care who you are. You know, like, he doesn't think I'm funny anyway. He thinks I'm the most, like, I'm a grumpy dad, you know, like, so. And then Crystal is like, yeah, whatever. I need you to do this and this and this. And it's nice because it grounds you back to who you are, you know.
The reality.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't meet somebody prior to any kind of success with this. You know what I mean?
Like, they've known you all along.
Now. Yeah.
Because my girlfriend now at this point is having to learn comedy for me.
Right.
You know, because we met, radio was the gig. I came home every night, and that was sort of the way it is. Now I'm like, all right, I'm about to head out. I'll see you in a few days or maybe 2 weeks.
And yeah.
It's like, wow, I didn't expect all this.
How's that been adjusting from the radio switch back to the road?
It's made comedy so much more fun again because, you know, I had done stand-up before for years.
Right.
And then I went to radio, and I still did stand-up, not like full-time. But to go back at it, it's kind of like a fighter when you get back and go, I can still do this. My feet still move. I can still,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, my hands are up. I've still, the old, like, it's like, yeah. Because I've often thought, like, well, if I took time off to write or something like that, you know. But I wondered where radio is so regimented.
Well, that's one reason I started to hate it. I mean, I loved radio for a while. I mean, I, getting up and being able to go and broadcast to 400,000 people and win awards, that's great. But then when corporate starts telling you, don't say this, don't do that, let's try this every day, which they call it in radio benchmarks, and that drives me crazy. Have you ever listened to radio? And
yeah.
Today is, it's time for Hollywood news. Today it's time for War of the Roses. Today it's time, it's the same shit every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and as a comics, we become like, oh my God, can't I just talk about something else?
Yeah, 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 whatever's on my mind, like rant about something or get, you know, talk to somebody on the phone about something that's funny to me, you know, like I couldn't even imagine that, especially like, man, it's really killed the radio personality, corporate radio. I can't even imagine what that's like, because it's the same way, it's got to be the same as like, you're taking cues on what's funny from people that don't
know what's funny.
Yeah.
What is it, the whole thing that those that can't do,
teach? Right, right. Those who can't do, teach. And that's why there's so many times where we're working with somebody on a script or something, like when we were doing Those Who Can't, and we're working with their development people.
Which was your TV show, by the way.
Right, right. That we sold a pilot. But when we were dealing with the development people, that was they're like, well, that joke doesn't hit. No, it's going to be funny. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, and the way, like, we do it, it will be funny.
Yeah, but why did you hire us? If you don't trust that we know what's funny or to take risks on what's funny, then why did you hire us? And so,
that's Hollywood.
Yeah,
that's Hollywood. Hollywood is just, it's lacking creativity. And I'd hate to say that because I still would like to go out. I still have been talking to some people about some ideas for shows. But you still go, you guys, the creativity is dead.
Right.
You're just copying what you already know. You're cloning other shows.
And
new
movies,
shows
yeah.
are bits and pieces of two or three shows you've thrown together to create a new show.
They keep, I mean, network television tries so hard to keep that formula of sitcom television going because they remember a heyday when it had huge ratings and they're trying to, but I think people aren't looking that, you know, society has changed drastically. And I loved Roseanne.
Right. Like,
Roseanne was one of my favorite shows, and I still will every so often if I'm at home, I turn on an episode of Roseanne just as a sitcom show. It was so gritty and real, and
it still holds up.
Right, it does. And I think that, like, as far as shows like that, like, nobody's really riding that, like trying to take what's a real angle of a family, but not overdoing it and making it so on the nose. She was real great at that.
Like, I think what's missing is, well, everything today is a sex joke. Everything on the show, any show you look at, is a sex double entendre, or how can we say it?
Right.
Where you watch old great TV shows, and it's basically what you said. It was taking one subject and writing a show around it, just of an everyday situation. You know,
yeah.
Like if you watch an old Andy Griffith show, Opie learned a lesson because he left his bike out overnight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was a great 30-minute.
Well, and that's why Seinfeld was so popular, I think, is because it took the mundane idea and wrapped a whole episode around absolutely nothing.
The show about nothing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I mean, it was about something, but it was about 1,000 different tiny little somethings, you know, and that was what made the show great. And I don't think very many people are doing that. I think it is an amazing time for television and all the dramas. Drama side is just dropping.
Well, like, cable.
Yeah, cable is amazing. But I think talking to network people, they're all just scared of losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody's just trying to keep a job over there.
Right.
You know?
Nobody wants to make a decision. Let me run this past them. Let me see.
You look at like comedy festivals, you don't see people signing big development deals. You don't see what's his face, Ray, the comic that everybody loves, Raymond.
Oh, Ray Romano?
Ray Romano's, like people that went to comedy festivals, blew it up, and then got a development deal.
Right.
Because nobody wants to take risks.
I had a couple of those when I lived in L.A.
Did you?
They signed you to a deal, a holding deal. You give you this much money, and we're going to try to create a show around you. And you know, I don't know if you knew, I wrote and sold a show to Disney back in the late
90s.
It was called Trailer Trash. I wrote the pilot, and they like loved it, but it was the same thing. Once it got past, we love it, we want to put you with a showrunner, then it was like, well, that's not funny. Well, we should change that to this. We should change these words. We can't do that because that's... even in one meeting, somebody went, well, where's the person of color? And I was like, I don't know. It's set in a trailer park in the South.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, where's the white guy on the old In the House show? You know?
Right, right.
You know what I mean? It was this whole thing about, well, you're just trying to create something that wasn't already... If you already liked it,
right,
why didn't we just run with it?
Right.
Why are we tearing it apart and changing it? Why are you telling me I can't have an 80-year-old paper boy?
Right.
Because you might find that in the South. The old dude driving his truck, you still call him the paper boy, but he's 80 fucking years old.
You find that in Maine. I mean, growing up in Maine, I haven't heard that. Like the old guy that you just hear his minivan door open at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
That guy is amazing. Because he's been doing that since day one, like since he can remember.
Right.
You know, he probably started that job. And he's got that weird house with all kinds of shit.
Right,
in the yard.
But people can't relate. They're not going to be able to relate to an 80-year-old character. God. Well, and that's part of the problem with American TV. Like, if you watch shows in Britain, they're about anything.
Right.
You know, there's a show called Lunch, I think it's called Dinner Ladies or something like that. And it's all about, like, women at work at Furs Cafeteria. Can you imagine a show like that ever being pitched in Hollywood?
I love it.
There was a show called One Foot in the Grave about a nursing home and people dying off every episode.
Right.
American TV. Well, who's going to want to watch a bunch of old people die?
Well, that's what that's...
get creativity past them.
I just wrote a pilot that did really well, but nobody will pick it up. I got a ton of meetings out of it just for the writing on it. But growing up in central Maine, you know, I mean, I wrote it about Augusta, Maine, and this area called Sand Hill, which is this very poor, impoverished area of Maine, and people think Maine of this idyllic lighthouse.
Oh yeah,
but Maine is as
there's
Conan,
lobsters and beautiful people.
Yeah, yeah, but Maine, as Conan O'Brien put it, is the deep south of the far north. Like Maine, Maine is like very rural, very conservative, very, you know. And it's where I'm from, and I'm proud of the people that I grew up around. But I wrote this pilot about this small time drug war that started. And it's all white ghetto. That's all it is. I mean, Maine is 99% white.
Right.
So it's like, they're like, nobody would believe these kids talking like that. And I'm like, if you think that black culture didn't permeate into Maine and turn these hicks into all these wannabe thugs and whatever, you just air it and it'll, everybody in the Midwest, any little small town where that's happened, you know, you
well,
all
I've
have
said that.
That.
I agree. I've said that same thing about... That's what happened in Oklahoma. Like, how did you guys go? How are you ghetto? You're driving a tractor in a hayfield.
Oh, yeah.
Why is you talking?
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mixing of cultures is... Like, in Maine, it's funny because everybody has a fucking Maine accent, so they all fucking talk like this. You
and
know?
Now add rap lingo?
Yeah, yeah. Now they'll be like, dog, what's your fucking problem? Gee, you've got no, seriously, dog. Yo, we're gonna fucking, I swear to fucking God, like I'm gonna have to go grab my gat. You know, it when I was in the 90s, that's how it was. You know, like, peace, God, one up. You know what I mean? And it'd be like, it's the funniest. And in these apartments, like Grateful Dead tapestries.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Because Maine is still like very hippie, jam bandy as well. Like most rural areas, you have a lot of hippies and like hicks and all that stuff. That's what I grew up around. You know, you couldn't help. There's just this weird mix of people. And I wrote that and they were like, nobody, I don't know that people will believe this. And I'm like, just, you think that LA is the world.
They think it's the center of the world.
Right. LA
everything
and
else,
New York.
Everything else is flyover. That drives me crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Everything, the flyover people.
You're right.
You know, you mean the rest of the country?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who are you trying to sell shit to?
The vast majority of it. And that's why I love, like, I've told people, like, Omaha, great city. That's a great little town. I like Des Moines. I think Des Moines a cool little town.
Oh, yeah.
Good people, great
clubs and laughter.
Oh, yeah. St. Louis, even. St. Louis is a rough town, but it has some really awesome, amazing stuff. I mean, there's just, like, I spend most of my time in the Midwest and Southwest, and this is where I'm happiest. But I get, that's why I'm not moved. Everybody shits on us and the Grolics for the fact that we never left.
Yeah. I have to say I applaud that too. I think finding your niche, working it, and not selling out is
And I don't even know, you know, I mean, I would write for shows and I would, but I want a quality of life that I don't think that Los Angeles can provide with what I make. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to live in an earthquake prone, natural resource depleted, you know,
mudslide, fire, gang shooting.
I land out at DIA and I get in the car and I start driving and we hit the open plains and I feel like I can breathe again. Like, I don't feel crowded and I'm like, home, the mountains and stuff. Like, this is where I ran to, you know, like I hated Maine and I was unhappy and I came here and this is where I found happiness. And I'm like, I don't want to go. I'll go as often as I have to for work.
It's great to go away and come back.
Great. I mean, you're performing at the Laugh Factory. It's got to be, so fun.
I do the Laugh Factory and the Ice House in Pasadena. And, you know, it's great to go do those and come home. And then when I get out there and I'm stuck in traffic for two and a half hours, you start going, that's why I don't live here. Why I don't live here.
When you're in Santa Monica for a meeting and it takes you 2.5 hours to go, what your GPS says is only 8 miles down the road.
Right.
Yeah, and you're stuck on Santa Monica Boulevard, and I just have no use for that. And I would move to Wyoming. I probably, if I had a lot of money and I was had the kind of money, like say you know, like a Danny McBride, where they make their own show and they get to do it.
Yeah, produce it and shoot it right here. Find a little warehouse and turn it into a studio, and that's all you got to do.
Right. And then I would totally I'd probably have a house in Wyoming. I love that.
Guy, an old West. We were just talking earlier. You like Westerns and old West.
Yeah, nobody
stuff.
Ever believes me because I got all the tattoos.
Yeah. Hold on just a second. That dog's driving me. Okay, I'm back. I went and grabbed this giant dog here and had to shut her up. So for half the podcast, you're here in the back.
Aww.
Now she's quiet.
That thing. What does that thing weigh?
3.5 pounds. It's a 3.5 pound.
That's a bag of M&Ms, not a dog.
I think your box of kale chips over there weighs more.
Yeah. I'm doing like a fitness challenge at the gym. Like, I'm trying to cut body fat percentage down so I can like get.
You have no body fat. What is the?
I do. I'm like any dude. I've got it like that
in the middle.
That tire thing, like any guy does, which isn't a bad thing. I think you want that. Shit, it's the fan. I'm gonna. That's my meals for the. But Westerns. Totally.
Yeah. So we're talking about Westerns. You love Westerns.
I'm a big Western.
You've suggested some movies that I've should check out.
And yeah. I don't even know how it started.
Especially from Maine.
Yeah, well, I mean, my stepfather is a big, you know, they live in the middle of the woods, and he has a skidder and like four wheelers, and when I'm home, we go shooting and stuff, and he's a big gun collector, and he's got, he builds hospitals. That's why he's like a. And then my dad's just been a businessman. My parents are divorced, but I don't know where it started. I think probably Netflix or something, or Tombstone. No, I saw Tombstone.
Tombstone, one of the greatest Westerns of all time.
Dude, so good. It should be called Valstone, really, because it's just Val Kilmer's movie. Like,
I'll be a huckleberry.
Yeah, nothing like the real, I don't imagine what the real Doc Holliday was like. I think the movie Wyatt Earp probably got everybody pretty close to what they actually were.
Now, I liked Wyatt Earp. I liked the movie. I love Kevin Costner. And I thought Tombstone
better movie. Not nearly as factual, obviously. Like, Wyatt Earp was, you know, he was a pretty conflicted dude, you know? I mean, he was half on the right side of the law and half on the wrong side of the law. I mean, I think he had been a horse thief. And then he got in trouble for stealing horses, and then he was put in jail, and then he became a lawman, and he married a prostitute. He was kind of a...
She was a drug addict. Yeah.
So he was kind of a... He rode that line. So Wyatt Earp, I appreciate for the historical part of it, but it's just not nearly as great of a movie.
In Tombstone.
Oh, man. That, like... It, you know, because they embellished on so much stuff, but they figured out, like, let's just make an awesome movie.
Awesome Western. Yeah. Well, like the when Doc Holliday was spinning the cup when he's drinking.
Oh, yeah, that's so good. And that's another character. I mean, Johnny Ringo was a nobody. Nearest anybody can tell is that he was kind of a... He was like kind of a like a mid-level gambler, never really did much with his life. He was kind of a flub, you know. He wasn't the prolific gunfighter that they made Johnny Ringo out to seem in that movie, but he was awesome in that movie.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, that mustache. He was a great villain. And that like his drunken rambling right before they almost get into it in the street. I love that. Like I want blood. That's so good. And then we were talking about Open Range.
Yeah, I have the movie poster from Open Range upstairs. And you're like, well, best under. And I do too. I agree. That to me was as good as Dances with Wolves.
Oh yeah.
I mean, as far as westerns go, and the way it was shot, directed, edited, I don't know why it didn't just blow up.
I think it got put out during a year of some movies that kind of stole attention from it, but. Because I didn't know what it was, and I was a Western fan, and I had found it. And I was like, well, I'll give it a chance. And those, like, amazing sweeping shots of the prairie and stuff. And I was watching the movie. I'm like, this is a pretty decent movie. And I was sitting in the living room, and Crystal, my wife, is doing something in the other room. I don't remember what. And then all of a sudden, that last 10 minutes of gunfight comes up. And I'm screaming my head off. Because the movie changed. I mean, it had some scenes. I love the scene where he's in the bar and he blows the mirror apart with the scatter gun.
Right.
It's like, boom, just to get their attention. But you're like, you can feel it brewing. But that last gun battle, oh, man, for my money, doesn't get any better.
One of the best ever. That's the scene where he shoots the guy through the wall, knocks him against the wall of the other building.
Just the sheer energy. Yeah! You know, like, I'm so excited. She was like, what is going on in there? I'm like, this movie went from being good to real awesome.
Awesome. And that guy, was it the Irish guy that was all shot up in the end?
Yeah,
and Robert Duvall's character was like, had him down in the last...
Yeah, that shot where they're sitting end to end,
yeah.
And they're just firing shots at it. Because I think that was the realism part that I liked a lot as well. I don't think people understood how absolutely inaccurate those old revolvers were. I mean, they kicked so much that you would just slice and pull bullets like you know. Because I mean, that thing had nothing to
you
protect
you. Just pointed
it
in the direction of something
you
wanted to hit.
Yeah.
Boom!
And that's what I loved is they didn't hit everything. It showed how just wild and errant these shots could get. And I love that they chose to not use music during the gun battle there, too, as well. Because it just, that pop of the gun and the smoke flying out.
You didn't amazing. Miss the whole typical Western of the... Da, 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 da,
yeah, I still... Don't get me wrong, I still love that. And in fact, Adam Caton Holland is a huge Western nut because he was a film major. And he and I have talked about making a movie that is one of those, almost like Rio Bravo, which is another one of my favorite of all time.
Me too. I agree.
With John Wayne and Dean Martin. And
which was is the same movie as Rio...
It's the other one.
Is it?
It's not Rio Grande. No, but I know
what you're talking about. Because one is Dean Martin and him, and the other one is... I can't remember the actor's name.
And now you're going to have to IMDb that.
I have to do it. But one of them was the young guy was Dakota, which was... James Caan's character with the shotgun, and the other one was the young kid was Frankie Avalon or whatever.
Oh,
it was almost the same exact movie.
Yeah, and I thought it would be cool to... We were joking that it would be fun to do one of those catalog Westerns. That's what I call them, because they all looked like they were dressed out of a Western wear catalog.
Yeah,
I'd love to do that with the music, like the opening scene with him trudging down through the hills, the long shot. You can just see him kind of getting closer and like a man on his horse rides, you know.
Yeah.
But all the violence in the movie is so over the top, bloody and whatever, like almost
too much.
Yeah, like it belies how like...
It's not even spaghetti Western. It's gone over past that.
But everybody, there's like those musical parts where the guy is in jail and has that musical number like Dean Martin does. And
right. Well, you lay there and you play the guitar.
Yeah,
and the other
guy
in the jail goes, yeah, I loved that song. My mom used to sing it to me.
Just so they had some like reason. That movie was so good.
I've always thought a good Western would be, especially now that Stallone has brought back the Expendables, where it's all the action heroes.
Oh, yeah.
I think a good Western would be you'd get every Western star and do an Expendables type of Western.
Like
Tom Selleck was always a good Western guy.
Oh, yeah, like Quigley Down Under.
Another one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, just go through the list of the
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood.
What's his...
Gene Hackett.
What's his face? Who was in for a few dollars more? Or Fistful of Dynamite?
Lee Van Cleef?
Yeah, well, is he even
alive? I don't know if he's still alive anymore.
No, he's probably dead. No, the other one, Bronson.
Oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
But he was another one of those great guys.
Yeah. That would be what's tough, but you could go back and find all of those amazing characters.
Well, almost anybody that was in Silverado, which was another great Western.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then you could also Sam Elliott. You know,
Sam Elliott. We just saw Kevin Costner. If you go through
Robert
and
Duvall.
Think about Robert Duvall.
Yeah.
You take all these guys...
And make an expendable genius idea. I would be front row with a
plastic guns
plastic
on.
Guns on. You just see, like, ooh, hey, boys, we're about to do it now.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, Nancy, boy, sit up front with me. Like, I totally would. I love all the old ones, man. I love the Wild Bunch. I like Sam Peckinpah's movies are really awesome. John Ford. I love the old ones, man. I love. God,
do you watch the Westerns on any like Netflix or those random weird ones? It's the train to Yuma.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
The 30 seconds to Death Valley. It's I don't even heard of these before.
Yeah. Like Pass at Apache Gulp.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you're like, who is in this? And it stars like these, nobody has ever heard of any of them. The other funny one is, I have this box set that's like old John Wayne movies from like the 30s and stuff like that, and amazing old black and white, and how bad they were. Really, you see that John Ford just innovated filmmaking.
Westerns.
Yeah, and Westerns. I mean, he did so much for modern filmmaking. I still think The Searchers is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I just watched that the other day. It was really good.
So good. And even, I like True Grit, and I enjoyed the remake. I thought that Josh Brolin as the villain was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But that scene where he, like, stabs his hand and then blows his head off, I'm watching it with Milo, who's 9 years old, and Crystal comes in, and we're watching it, and she's like, are you watching True Grit with him? And I'm like, he's fine. He gets it. We talked about it. He knows
the difference between real and reality.
And Milo's just got this shocked look on his face. And I'm totally like, maybe you ought to not. Mom said that this isn't good. But
yeah, I did that with my son when he was little with Tremors.
Tremors. With weird gremlin things that
shot out of the ground for no reason.
Yeah.
I let him watch it, and there was a mistake of, he wouldn't get off furniture. He was going around the house. We wouldn't get on the floor because of the movie scared the shit out of him. So now he's just jumping chair to chair, crawling across counters. You're like, I have really made a mistake here.
He thinks that they're going to come out? How old was he?
He was probably 5 or 6 at the time, you know?
where like life hasn't shown him that there is very little magic.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I've been watching Westerns with him since, I mean, that's kind of what I do. If I'm home on a Sunday, if I'm not coming back from a club, if I've been around for a couple weeks, Sundays, I pop in a Western, and I have a bit about that, but I just nap. I'm a big napper now, because I feel like that's what
throw in a Western and nap.
I love that. There's nothing better than like kind of waking up, and you pop in Hang 'Em High, and then I'm just... Which another one that I love. I love Hang 'Em High. That's a great one. And the obvious, I think The Outlaw Josie Wales is like the quintessential Western movie. It's just...
Yeah, what's that? There's a great line from that one where if people don't live long. If you like them, people don't live long or something
Yeah. That's exactly what I think he says. It's something to the effect of, people you like don't live long. Yeah, he's... that character is so good. But I mean, that character of a guy, of a man scorned, his family gone, and seeking revenge is like, to me, that's perfect. And so many good gun battles and a lot of history in it, you know, with the Red Legs and, you know, the back and forth between Kansas and Missouri that happened, that, you know, that they were such bitter rivals,
right?
You know, which is so cool.
Well, the Westerns always give a chance to teach right and wrong.
Yeah,
that was, and I think that's one of the things that's missing from TV and movies now.
Yeah,
we're all rooting for the bad guy now.
Right.
And it used to be good, the good guy triumphs somehow in the end.
Right. Well, it's speaking to our cynicism. I mean, I think it, and it, they're interesting character studies. I think we crossed the line where we felt like everybody has this inherent bad in them that we're all, and I think I'm learning that most people, it's in our nature to be good and want to be altruistic and help each other because that's good for the species.
Right.
It's called in evolutionary psychology, it's called reciprocal altruism, which means that I'll do things for you because it benefits the group or myself in some manner. And it, whether or not it's because you expect something physical in return, it means that the general health of the group is better. You know, like, I mean, everything is done for a reason. I'll help this person because if I do, their family gets better. And that's good for the species. That's ingrained in us, you know? So I think I can see,
you know, and I see it and I agree with it. But at the same time, don't you think helping people, if now we've gotten way too far as a society with that,
like, where's your handing out?
Where's your don't you want to help? No, what it goes back to, teach a man to fish,
right?
He fishes forever. Give a man a fish and he eats one night. You know, it's that kind of, I'm still in that world of, you got to make people want to help themselves,
right? And I would agree to that. I also, we've talked about this too, we've had that. I also think that the hand is stacked against some people too, and it's being stacked against us. And what I have problem with is that I feel like a dwindling working and middle class is damaged, because I know, like, my, you know, my stepfather has seen his jobs dwindle.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen it with a lot of the people that I know from back home, that their jobs are, they used to own a hardware store, now it's gone. You know, and those are to me, it's weird that they're the same people fighting to defend the same legislation that's killing their economy.
Right. No, I hear you and I agree on that, too, because I miss the days of, like, running down to, you know, Mr. Johnson's hardware store, or that guy would help you. And now it's all the big box stores. Everything's a big box.
When was the last time you could find anybody in a fucking grocery store to help you find something? I can't find anybody anymore.
No.
I just, like, one, like, hopelessly kind of meander around the store, and I'm like, I don't. And then you find somebody and they're pissed that you asked them, and I'm like,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't, you know.
They don't just, because there's nothing personal. They don't know the owners. They don't know any. I worked for a while for a liquor store. That's a shocker. But I managed a liquor store that was family owned. And the people that worked there would have fallen on a sword for the owner, because they knew him and they knew his motives and they knew what he was about. And he took care of us. And that was...
And here's your Christmas bonus.
And thank you for... And he didn't even have to give us a Christmas bonus. I mean, if he did, it was $25.
But that still felt great, didn't
it? Yeah, and we were like, no, man. Like, I'm like, you don't have to do that. You know, but like, times where, because he had food and stuff as well, it was like kind of, it's Denver Drug and Liquor on Colfax and Logan, which is now not owned. He sold it. But they had groceries. And there was times where I didn't have a lot of money. And he's like, just take it. Just grab something and take it. You guys can get some groceries here. He watched out for us. But in turn, if somebody didn't show up, I was there early.
Very Mayberry.
Yeah, well.
Very Mayberry.
I totally like that. Like, I'm totally, I've said, I don't think you and I are all that different in our views. I think there's an assumption because of some of the, I have some out there thoughts on things.
But I have some out there.
Yeah. But I paint in broad strokes anyway. I'll be first to admit that on stage. I believe in I don't believe religion is the problem with the world. Like, I don't believe atheism is any answer for any spiritual, like, or any, a way to enlightenment or betterment of society. I like, we've talked about religion, and I think that we all are doing what we need to do to get through life, and we're all believing what we need to believe.
Whatever your higher power belief thing
is. Right, whatever. Whether it's science or whether it's God, we're all just
Maybe I'm being scorned right now.
Right this second. I'm being as you choke on a kettle chip.
But I like, that's my thing is, I pissed off so many atheists with my bit on religion. Because I say, like, who are you to be so arrogant? Like, well, you know, Christians are deluding themselves or whatever. And it's like, you don't? We all don't? I do? I believe that hard work and talent will get me to where I want to be. That's never happened. You should be famous if that's the truth. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, this comedy is not a race that the fastest person wins.
Right, right, right.
This is not, that's not how it's done.
Right, and I don't even know that there is a winning.
I don't think so either, but I agree that is the basis of everything. It's hard work.
Right.
And belief in yourself. I right. mean, that's what's going to do
it. And belief in something bigger than you. I do believe that that's important. I really do. Whatever that is, I believe if you, whatever you call it and whatever you believe, I don't, like, that's to me so personal. That's why I've never believed in attacking.
If you want to say there's no God, okay, and I've had this argument with other people.
Sure.
If you want to say the Big Bang Theory, like God didn't create it. God didn't just go, boop, there's some men on a planet. Even right. if you want to go with the Big Bang Theory, let's say that. Who took the two atoms and threw them together?
Right, right.
Something started it. I don't care right. what it was. Something made the original atom.
Right.
Something. How do you argue that there's nothing out there?
I think I fully 100% believe that if you... You know, that perception and belief is everything. If you believe, I think we're sitting in these little private theaters, you know, in our mind that you know, we get to create these things and to live them in it. I don't like believing that there's nothing after this. Could have been how I was raised. I don't like believing that there's not some force to this. I don't know what it is. I haven't figured that out yet, and I don't know. But I grew up going to church, and it was, I don't know if that part has stuck with me, but
oh,
I can't.
It has.
Like, yeah.
And I mean, it has, because it has with me. I grew up in the church, and I still think that there's something out there and something bigger. And I've got questions. You know, I tell people, you know, God creates Adam and Eve, and then Adam and Eve, you know, they have kids. And
right.
then where's the rest of the population come from? Is there an incestual thing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cain and Abel. Cain takes a wife. That's what it says in the Bible. Where's the wife come from?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Okay, there's all these questions. The Bible and time period, they're like, people are 900 years old. Old as Methuselah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There's all this. But then if you go back to the Bible, there was no day or light until a certain point. Like, and then they, you know. So how long was an actual time period before, if there's no light?
I read an amazing quote that somebody, and it kind of stuck with me, that he was saying to understand religion by looking at the Bible is like trying to understand the game of football by looking at a playbook, and or understanding NFL and American culture by looking at an NFL playbook. That's not what it's about. This is so much bigger. It's about the community. It's about the people and the rules that are established to keep that group bonded. And I think that's what's important.
Societal rules.
Right, right. I think that these, whether or what truth, how many truths are in the Bible or whatever, to me, that's for each person to determine for themselves.
And it drives me crazy when somebody takes part of a quote and just uses it. Just that part. The Bible says, judge not. No, the Bible says, judge not, lest ye be judged.
Right.
Which means you better be prepared to be judged if you're going to do it.
I have a whole bit right now where I talk about, you know, because atheists point that out a lot. And I talk about how, and I have a lot of friends who are atheists, and I have a lot of friends who are religious. And that's why I think I sit in the middle, because I like
both.
And I can see their intentions with it. You know what I mean? And so I'm kind of like, well, what is the truth? And I have to find that for myself. But I atheists do the same thing. I have a lot of friends that are staunch monogamists. Like, they're in monogamous relationships. They can't imagine it being any other way. But if you're an atheist and science is your doctrine, well, then you shouldn't be monogamous, because science says that you're not monogamous. Your scientists tell you that there are...
Your animalistic instincts should take over.
Right, and that you are a primate.
And there are no known primate species that are monogamous, according to modern science. There's none. And that includes human beings. So if you don't believe in, if you follow science, you should be forced to accept every part of science that tells you. And by the way, also science supports the need and ideas and religion in a sense. It says that these things that we've come up with were part, science says that it's part of group activity and group dynamic to create doctrines and laws. And if nobody is watching you, then people take from each other. So you make something that's what they believe. And so you have to understand and learn to accept that as well, that this is a part of normal human thought. Religion is, if you do not believe in God as a deity, you have to understand that the creation of that is part of normal human psyche. And so like you have to accept that. And that's the part that frustrates me. Science supports accepting religion as being part of normal human thought process.
Right. At least spirituality of it.
Right.
The spirituality of like there is something besides you. You need,
right.
You will answer to something. You will, something in nature is bigger
I'll
than
you.
I'll
tell you why I think it happened. And I once again, I've seen some shit that I've questioned. And I've had moments, and I don't know if I was looking for them or if they were real, and that's where I am stuck in the middle. But if it was created, we were talking about this, and my wife was like, "I'm not a thief." "Yes, you are." And she's like, "I'm not." And I'm like, "You've stolen." And she's like, "What?" And I'm like, "Software. Software is basically." And she's like, "No, that's not stealing." And I'm like,
That's pirating. That's
that
different. Is, that's pirating software.
Like, she's like, "There isn't." I'm like, "That is stealing. Some programmer made that." And here's the thing. Her excuse is, there's nobody watching her when she do it. It seems like it's a victimless crime because there's no eye. And I think that when crime, humans are opportunistic. I believe that if it was fabricated, and I don't want to, I'm not saying that, I don't know, but if it was, it seems like it was created as a way for us to police ourselves. You know what I mean? Because if not, we are pretty opportunistic creatures.
Right.
And science supports it, like evolutionary psychology supports that as well. But then on the other hand, like I've had moments where I was talking about it on another podcast, where I've had moments of like just profound peace. And I don't know, and it was more so than I'd ever experienced. I don't know what it was. I can't explain it. I've had stories of relatives who have, you know, heard angels or that I trust, you know what I mean? And people that wouldn't lie to me.
They've had a guidance of some kind.
Yeah, right. My aunt, my cousin had a massive heart attack and was in a coma, and my uncle, who was her favorite uncle, had died. And in that, she swears she had a revelation of, like, in the coma, she kept having a recurring dream where she was flying in a plane with him, and he was telling her that it wasn't her time and that to relax and everything is fine after this. And she had this profound moment, and when she woke up, she told everybody, and my aunt, who was his wife, told her that his biggest dream and regret before he died was that he never learned how to fly an airplane. And she had never told anybody that.
So it all ties together.
Yeah, yeah. And she, my aunt was like in tears. These are people I've grown up with. They're not mystics. They're cynical main assholes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether that was from the drugs or something, it seems like a spooky revelation to have that. You know what I mean?
Well, you're talking about how science and religion go hand in hand. And I've sort of had this conversation when I've been trying to explain psychics to people that go, "Do you really believe in that there's a psychic bill?" Sometimes. So let's take it down this road. If science-wise, computers are zeros and ones. Zeros and ones. That's all
right.
It is, zeros and ones. And everything is an energy, a computer energy. So
right. Everything
that is living is an energy. Anything that's a piece of paper can turn into fire, and that energy.
Right.
Matter can become something else. So that energy is zeros and ones, if you just want to think about it.
Yep.
So that's all flying around the universe. This energy is all around us.
Right.
Who's to say that somebody does not have the tuning ability like a radio or a computer that they get the zeros and ones?
Right.
That it just comes to them. They're just at that one frequency.
Right.
Because everything is energy.
Yeah.
I would play around with the idea too that I joke constantly that people are trying to constantly change something that you're incapable of changing, whether it's God that has some preordained path for you and some and something for you, or if it's science that supports the fact that we live according to stimuli in our culture and our society, and that you're set in motion by a few certain things. You're almost like if you propel something really fast in a, you know, like a Hadron collider or something, it has a path. Right. Scientists can predict that path based on the stimuli that they've put on it. So why couldn't somebody look at you and be receptive to the fact that, well, this is clear the way the person, you're in tune with the fact of how, you know, like, I think we're all connected. So if you're all in tune with their emotions and how they feel, and why couldn't you predict their bounce pattern like it's physics? Why right. couldn't you think about that? Like, if I hit a ball off a rail, if I know where it's coming from.
Physics is going right, to tell you where
it's going to go. Why couldn't somebody who's in tune?
It could be the same way. Now that you're saying this, I just it hits my brain. If you think of God as putting you at the top of the mountain stream,
right.
and you know you have to follow that stream all the way down,
right?
That doesn't mean that along the way something isn't going to change your path, but you're still going to end up down there.
Right.
Somebody might throw a rock and knock you against the way over here.
Yeah.
Or you're caught up in a stick or a whirlpool for 2 or 3 days.
Right.
But then something sends you on down. You're still on a guided path that you know you're going to go.
Yeah.
But several things along the way have changed your trip.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I always say, I think of people when they, how stupid they look trying to change the you know, like, getting upset and like when I think about it and I see myself doing it. Have you ever seen a car when it gets caught in a flash flood? There's be like asshole on the news that you see like trying to edge his car across
It moves like melted butter on a frying pan.
Yeah. Just, and there's that moment where the driver realizes, like, doesn't realize he's completely out of, and he's still turning the steering wheel and you see the windshield wiper blades go on.
But you're about to go downstream.
Right. Your car is sideways, dude. It's going sideways. You are no longer in control. That's what I feel like a lot of people look like. They're like, I'm in control, right? I'm in control of this. The windshield wipers. And really what I think is we're all kind of doing that. You might as well decorate the car, surf on the top of it, treat it, you know, like be as cool as you can.
Jump up and just hit a surfer pose and ride your car down.
Ride it, whatever, you know, like don't do what you can to veer your car into somebody else. Because like you said, that end place that you go to is the same.
You're going to end up down there.
But I think that that's what people forget is you can argue all the fuck you want about what is right and who is right and who is wrong. But in the end, we're all heading towards the same drop off. Like we're all going in the same direction.
We're all going over the falls.
Yeah, like we're all going to go there. So might as well just like try to enjoy the ride as much as possible, you know what I mean? And like try to be as cool with each other. I don't give a shit. Like
I had this discussion the other day with a liberal friend of mine who actually goes, wow, you're not as out there as I thought. I go, no, I believe in right and wrong. That's it. It's just right and it's,
you hate entitlement.
I hate entitlement.
Yeah.
That pretty much is it. I just believe in right and wrong.
It's been
because I worked 3 or 4 jobs at one time. You've worked since you were a kid.
Right.
You know, you cut grass if you need money. Did I need extra money? I went and picked up cans along the highway and got some extra cash. I didn't just sit and bitch about stuff all the time.
And I would argue that that's part of I think that one side is policing the top and one side is policing the bottom.
It's a little of both. I'm arguing with you guys, you know, up here.
I don't trust bankers and I don't trust people that expect the people to give them things. And so I'm kind of like, but I was looking at it and I'm like, the left looks up. And they're like, you're screwing us. And then the right seems to look down and go, these people are screwing us. And I think what they're all doing is they've all got their brooms trying to bat away and keep away anybody who's trying to rob shit from them.
I saw a cartoon that is the perfect example of the entire thing. It was a rope hanging over a cliff. And it's like you can tell this like people are well-dressed up at the top. And it's kind of like, you know, these dirty kind of poor people in huts and stuff at the bottom. And the top of it said, climb. And the other said, lift. And it, that's
great. I like it.
I threw you a rope. Now climb out. No, you lift me out.
And that's the argument. Climb or lift. That's really funny. Cool. Like idea. And I think that that's like, I think that that's the struggle. And I do think I'm believing that it's in our nature to help each other. And what the right does is protects their own people by policing people who they feel are taking without doing the hard work, right? And then I feel like the left polices the protects their own by looking at the people who they feel are taking too much and more than they deserve for the work that they did. And so it's all this thing that seems to be trying to keep everything at, let's, you know, because I think everybody has the same ends. Your goal with it, and that's the point I try to make to people, is why don't you look at what he wants? That person is not trying to create chaos in the world. They're trying to find a way to make this place better.
Yeah, and that's my goal, where I go back to with the right and wrong.
Right.
Just what is the right? Even if, are you going about this the wrong way? What would be the right way to do this?
Right,
you
right.
Know, it's all to be, is everything is a right and wrong. And people, oh, you mean just everything's in, you know, there's only two ways to the thing. There's no gray areas to you. And I go, gray areas are only created because you didn't do one or the other.
Right. I get what you're saying.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
If you do something wrong, now you're going to have to live in the gray area you you created.
Yeah.
Well, you don't see the no. If you would have done the right thing, which so let's go back to your wife pirating software. If she got
I want to be. I want to make this clear.
She hasn't done it. I'm just saying.
No, she has.
Okay,
but she's not like an over the top thing.
No, she's not selling pirated software. But just as an example, if she went to jail for pirated software,
right?
She would have to live with the consequences.
Which she probably will now after this podcast. But what were you saying? So anyway,
but she would live with the consequences of what she knew was probably wrong.
Right.
See, that's where I get with people. Like, if you do the right things, there's no real, like, always people like, well, I have to do this because I have bills.
Right.
You know, I have to do this because I have bills. Well, you created the bills.
Right.
You know, your kid didn't need a new iPhone 5 and every new game console.
Right.
You're spending less time with your husband, and that marriage fell apart because you wanted more stuff.
Well, and
you're creating these areas. No,
yeah,
what's the right thing?
I wish people would just understand that even maybe not even right and wrong. Maybe they're just, my wish is people would just understand, hey, make whatever your decision you want. I'm not going to tell you you can't do it, but don't complain about the consequence that comes out of it. That's what pisses me off, is you can eat whatever you want. I do not praise or think that legislation regulating the size of sodas will do anything or whatever.
Taking trans fats out of...
Right, right. We all know that shit is bad for you. Here's the thing. You ask the people who eat it, they'll flat out tell you to your face. I don't get... Like, I know so many people that I'll be like, dude, I can't believe you're eating that. And they'll be like, yeah, it's good. Mm. Oh, it's so bad for me. You know, and they know it.
Yeah.
And that to me...
We're all going to die of something.
Yeah, and I'm like, hell yeah, do that. But also, don't expect me to pay for your health care and your, like, don't expect me to come and pay for you if you know it's bad.
Yeah, you gave yourself diabetes.
Right.
With all the bad food.
I mean, there are people with legitimate...
No,
you know.
No, but see, that's where we're covering our asses again.
Right, right.
Because you go, okay, you gave yourself... Some of us didn't. God, I know that.
Yeah.
I'm no Captain Obvious. Thank you.
No. I'm not trying to say that. I'm not trying to make an attack on diabetes or people who make lifestyle choices. What I'm saying is, if you knew that choice, much the same, if you smoked your whole life and you made that choice, you knew that was bad for you.
Yeah.
And it's hard to overcome an addiction, but we've done it, and you can do it if you put in the work. If you made that choice, if I ended up like that, I'm not going to ask for handouts. I know that about myself. I'd be like, I did this to myself. If my drinking proves, after I've stopped, to have some adverse health effect, that is my fault. I am the one who has to pay the price for the lifestyle that I lived. I'm not asking anybody.
And this sort of goes back to what I was talking about earlier with the alcohol. Is it a disease? Is it an allergy? I think a lot of people do not want to accept the responsibility that they have a problem.
Right.
That they you might have a personality flaw. You might. I just think people don't want. That's why they could fall off the wagon over and over again and still be okay with it.
Yeah.
You know.
I think people fall off the wagon because they think when they quit, they're gonna, that's automatically going to solve all their problems.
The rest of their problems.
And like you said, the addiction is the problem. That tendency is there for whatever reason.
Yeah. You don't want to drink? Don't pick it up today.
Right.
Just
right.
Today.
Right.
Don't give me the, well, I have an allergy. It right. affects me different than other people. No, you get drunk like everybody else.
Yeah, we all get drunk. You poison yourself. You're putting it down your face. Get treatment. Get help. Go to people who know how to wean you off that and give you the tools to stay away from it. Because there are people, there are great people that's what they do. And that was a choice I had to make. I do know that I wish we didn't stigmatize it. If people could just say, I have an addiction. Yes, you do. Like, if you could just proudly say that and not feel like people are like, he has an alcohol problem and it's whispered and not talked about. If people could just say to you, like, you know what? You're a drunk. Stop drinking. You know?
Okay.
Okay. You know, like, it's not that simple. But what I'm saying is, if we don't put a stigma and attach a stigma to people with addictions and problems with drugs and alcohol and say, like, hey, man, I battled my own things and there's stuff I've had to overcome and you can do this. You know, but I'm not going to aid you and help you in this. This is a battle you have to fight.
You need to find your own jiu-jitsu class and take care of yourself.
You need to go punch something with your fist. But I think that, like, we stigmatize it, and that's the problem with diseases. There's the disease and then the illness, and the disease is this overwhelming thing. Like, I don't want to say it because alcoholics, it's viewed as being weak and whatever. No, we all have struggled at some point in our lives. Everybody has, and if people... we're more open about it, maybe. I know I wouldn't. I was so, like, I didn't want to admit it because I felt like it's a huge, drastic thing. Now I realize not really that drastic to say I'm an alcoholic and to stop.
And really enjoy your life.
Yeah.
And really. You know, yeah. That's what I now that years that I quit drinking, you start having more fun. You remember more things.
Yeah.
When it comes to comedy, things that you thought were funny at a bar that night, you still remember the next day.
You're right.
I'm putting that in my act.
Right.
I didn't forget it.
And that. For me, I don't know how it was for you, but the things that I was trying to numb, like my nervousness before I went on stage and my anxiety and like self-doubt and things like that, that are always going to be with me, have now become what have made me a better comic. My nerves are good for me. I perform better when I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, just a little bit. All right, let's get on stage.
Yeah,
be better once I'm out there.
Boom. And also, like, comes across that I'm not overly arrogant if I look, like, if I'm at first, like, a little bit of, like, well, you know, like, I'm a little more approachable rather than just coming out, like, with a little bit of a frown and, like, or just a little, lot more swagger. You feel like you have to, I do at least, I feel like I have to earn a lot more of the crowd's appreciation and they have to learn to like me. Whereas if I come out and I'm immediately like, hey, man, this is going to be awesome. And they can sense a little nervous energy. People are, that turns, like, that immediately turns the crowd on your side. They're like, he's a little bit, you know, open. Like, it's a little vulnerable about being on stage, you know, like.
Now, do you prefer to work clubs? Because I've seen that you guys are doing a lot more just rooms, not comedy
right.
clubs. But y'all are doing rooms or
right.
theaters. Do you find it easier for you to do rooms or do you like comedy clubs?
I love comedy clubs. I mean, I don't know why anybody wouldn't, you know, like, I guess a lot of, some people feel like, you know, a lot of people that go to comedy clubs and maybe their first time or they don't spend a lot of time listening to a ton of comedy CDs. You get a few people there, but they're people that are going out to a theater to see a show. And so a lot of comics, like alt comics, quote unquote, go to rooms like that and immediately lob very high ideas and things like that. And I'm like, you're like a baseball player, like a pro baseball player going out onto a diamond and you've got people who are relatively novice to the game and you're firing a 90 mile an hour fastball, some idea that is way over the top and whatever, or like some high concept idea when... it's not that these people are simple. It's just they're not as well versed at comedy. You know what I mean? And so I love comedy for that. Like,
well,
I love comedy clubs.
Don't you think that some one of the differences might be that, and you go to a comedy club, you better lay it down and knock it out of the park.
Right.
You when you go to a comedy club, they came to laugh. They paid money to laugh.
Right.
So when you get some of those guys that come in and throw the lob over their head.
Yeah.
You go, you didn't do your job. Yeah, I don't care what you want to say.
That one was for me comics.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I see that when you work a room, great. That's what you do. But if you come to a comedy club, throw it down the middle and let them swing at it.
Yeah.
But a lot of times when you go to a room, and I go to a place and I watch it, I go, that's a great idea. That's a good premise. That could work out to be something. Rooms seem to be more forgiving than comedy clubs. Does that make sense?
Like
you could just, it's almost like just go, I watch that guy give a nice talk.
What I mean? And I do a lot of, like, my newer stuff is more spoken word now, you know, that because a lot of it is done at the Bug Theater for the Grolix, which is a room, you know. It's not a comedy club. When I go to a comedy club, I work a comedy club. Like, I'm a...
Oh, I've seen it. You put it right down the... Yeah, like everybody else. Right,
I tell people comedy clubs, you got to treat them like bears. You got to get big and stay loud. You know what I mean? People at a comedy club love us. There's a swagger. You've got to own that stage and own your voice. I found that that's the biggest thing. Be very confident about what you're saying. And like you're saying, lob it. Don't lob it over their heads. Don't, like, talk over them or anything. Like, just fire it straight down the center. Own your voice on whatever you're doing. Yeah. I mean, you look at Bill Burr's and Jim Jeffries of the world, who say some pretty over-the-top things, but they own that opinion.
Yeah.
You know, they're like...
And there's a joke to go with it. It's not just an opinion. Right. Or with a... Isn't that a... Wouldn't this be amusing?
Right.
There's an actual opinion with a joke behind it.
Yeah. Whereas the alt rooms and clubs... I get it more in my head because I go back to high school. Am I hip enough? Am I cool enough to be here? I think that, so I get in my head about that, but I like the alt rooms for the ability to do things that are a bit more out there. You know, I have a whole bit about how I think that love is going to kill us all, right? Like, if you look at population, really, it's not our hatred. It's not world violence that's... The population just skyrockets, and that's because we save every single person. We save everybody. Everybody's got a chance, everything. And that's what I say. Like, look at the numbers. It's not our hate that's going to kill us. It's our love that's going to kill us.
I've said that kind of too. Like, I get so tired of, well, if we could save one child. Right. No, 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 we don't. Don't save all of them. There is some that... You're supposed to let go.
Oh, I love it.
Don't you remember that? You know what I mean?
I have a whole bit about how you don't know how fast you're going on the highway unless you gauge speed by something that's standing still. You don't know you're a success unless there's people that are failing.
Failing as you pass them by. You go, yeah, try harder, bitch.
Yeah. You know? Like, look at how awesome I am. This is success.
Right.
Yeah. I love that idea. I have a bit about that on my last
save show. One child. I go, no. Do you know who then you're behind him at the self-checkout at Walmart. That's that child you've saved, the one that can't figure out why self-checkout isn't working.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I love playing with stuff. I like doing that to people because I love crowds' reactions to that. Because I think deep down, people immediately, they're like, yeah, you know, like they're like, just one more asshole to get stuck behind. And that's, you know, that cracks me up.
That's my belief in the same thing with flying cars. People have always said, you know, watch the Jetsons in the 60s. Why don't we have flying cars?
Yeah.
We have the technology. What happened? And I go, I'm going to put it back to what you said. It's too much love. We have saved so many stupid people. Can you imagine turning people from Walmart loose with flying cars?
See, I love that. I think you've done that. I've heard that joke, and I love that. Like, why? I would love to see it. I'll take the risk. I'll drive around in a flying car if I get the chance. There's going to be a lot of morons up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the chaff will weed itself. Eventually.
Through mid-air collisions, we're doing better.
I saw an experiment where a guy took a huge piece of Lycra. It was stretched out over a big ring. It looked like a giant hula hoop. And he put a weight in the center, so it all kind of bent in the center. And he threw two handfuls of marbles into it. And what eventually happened is the ones that smashed into each other fell to the center. And then eventually everything just started moving in the same direction. I think that's what would happen with flying cars. You throw a bunch of them up there, the idiots will weed themselves out and fall to the ground.
And next thing you know, traffic is moving fine.
Flowing.
That's what I love. I think that that's the secret to life. Like, but we've done away with the ability to let that chaff fall. Like, we're not letting, and I agree with you. I think we're not letting certain, there has to be some people that do not make it through this so that everything goes in the right direction.
Well, you go back to your love, thinking about love. You, smart people have, intelligent people, I don't even know what the right word is, more right. higher, have one or two kids now.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? Poor people just have, I'm generalizing again, big brush.
No.
Have just a shitload of kids.
Right.
So the gene pool itself spreads like a cancer.
Right.
And I think that's, as we've saved more and more of these that should have passed through the net,
right.
We've let more and more of that grow.
Right.
And so those of us that sit around and think
right.
are outweighed.
And I do believe that that's, I mean, and that's, I think where you and I split off, I do believe as wealth gaps widen and as a lot more people are making a lot less, you tend to see that the people who are making a lot less make a lot more kids, which is just the strangest, it almost seems counterintuitive, but we still are a country of plenty, and even our poorest people are still pretty wealthy in comparison to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw my Facebook post that got my shit jumped.
No, what did you do? You always do this, though.
I was down in St. Martin, the island of St. Martin, and I saw how people were living. I mean, they're living in like houses where like car doors welded together to make a house.
Right.
These shacks and just like living. And they're all like, hey, good day. Thanks for visiting the island. And they're just like super happy people. You know, they're just.
Yeah.
And I went, man, I wish American poor saw how these people lived one time. They'd quit complaining about being poor.
Yeah, that's,
and it was like, what?
Right.
It's like, they're not poor. Americans aren't poor. These people are
right.
catching fish daily, cooking them in a old grease in a car where they live.
Yeah, who was
and
it?
You've got a cell phone, and you're bitching about shit, and you've got
somebody
free
had
cable.
A bit about that recently, too. That was like talking, not the same thing, but talking about how, oh, it was Stanhope. I saw Stanhope, and Doug was just pushing buttons. But he was talking about what would happen if you had locked up abroad, but you took somebody from Thailand and put them in one of our prisons.
Uh-huh.
Because he's like, you always send these. Why doesn't Thailand do locked up abroad? And it's this like lilting love letter from this Thai like kid who grows up in a slum living in an American prison. And he's like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
This place is gorgeous.
There's cable TV. There's a gym.
There's like a steel pot that every time you press the button, potable drinking water comes up from.
What?
Yeah. And so he's like, even at our poorest, you are still wealthier than most people. But it's we have a caste system where we have, you know, upper middle, and that striving for that. So to label yourself as poor, I think, makes you want to go up. And we do, you know, if you have less, if your house looks like that, you'd say that's a poor neighborhood, you know, and that's a label that we put on people. But I you know, have you ever seen God Grew Tired of Us?
Uh-uh.
It's a really amazing documentary about the Lost Boys of Sudan. These kids that lost their families in the Sudanese civil war and now live just across the border in a refugee camp in Ethiopia. And the United States gives them refugee status and brings them here. They have nothing. They eat one to two small meals a day. They don't have good shelters. But it's, you know, they have each other. There's this community.
Uh-huh.
They come here, and it's all about their struggle and a lot of their ultimate collapse into, if it's drugs or crime or things like that. And their thing was, they were like, there's no community here. There isn't a community here anymore.
Right. Yeah. You don't know your neighbors.
No.
You don't hang out.
Like,
there's not
nobody
the block.
Talks to each other. All we do is work. That's all everybody does. Work. And there's no like, no, I don't talk to him. Nobody helps me. I ask my neighbor for something. There's like these stories of them, and they can't fathom this. And it's like, I think that we took the community is gone, you know? So it's like, there's always been a poor class, but for a while there was a poor class with a sense of community and helping each other, and that maybe made it a little, the sting away a little bit less.
That was the small town feel.
Right,
Everybody lived in a small town, was not rich, but they worked the farm, but they had the, you know, that are you going to the dance Friday night?
Right, kind of
attitude.
Right.
They lived a good, simple, decent, smaller life.
Right. I crave that, I think, more and more. I think that's why I would own something in Wyoming, in some small town, you know what I mean? Just a place where I could get to know all the people. And
where you open a diner door and a bell rings and yeah. They go, hey, Ben!
Yeah. I don't hate metropolitan areas. Certainly, I live in Denver, and it's a big city. I love going to New York or to L.A. I like art. I like good food. I think there are amazing people and ideas that come out of that. But for my day-to-day living, like, I get more and more nervous and more panicky, and I like having neighbors that I can, like, we stop and chat. I know a lot of the neighbors in my building now, and we're all cool, and they can watch out. They watch out for my apartment, you know, and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
There's a sense of security to that. I can live with a lot less if I have that.
Right.
If I have, we have a barbecue and everybody hangs out, you know what I mean? And people are drinking and whatever till late at night. That sense of community, but, you know, you don't see a lot of people doing that in neighborhoods and cities anymore. And you don't see it even in small towns. My parents don't know their neighbors.
You know? Yeah.
Well, I think we covered out all.
I think we solved the world's problems.
We solved
today.
It, man.
We're
going to leave your basement.
And the world will be a better place. Listen to this.
I think it's a shockwave. We sent one out. Everything's good. No more problems anymore. But I'm glad. I feel like far too much now, and just to end on this, that everything is focusing on the differences between people. And I think that's the device of
things. Media has done that to us.
Right.
Media has pushed us into what are you?
Right.
What group are you in?
Right. Not realizing that we need those different, you know, in communal living, there are the people that have to break up fights and be like, dudes, can't we all get along? Maybe that's the leftist guy. But then every so often you got to be like, this shit got fucking real. And you need that guy that's like, I'll go get my gun. And I will mess. Like, everybody had a place and we have a need for that.
Yeah.
And I feel like this type of thing is good. Like, talking about where our common bonds are rather than trying to find, you know, a nitpick and argue about.
And all common bonds could be found in a good Western.
Yeah, it is. There it is.
That's what the world needs.
That's what it needs.
Watch more Westerns.
Right
on. All right. Thanks for doing the podcast here. Tell people how to get a hold of you, all your stuff.
Yeah, if you have any anger towards anything I said, what's your email? Steve
McGrew at MSN.com.
Yeah, McGrew at MSN.com. But if you want to find me, you can find me at www.benroyyellsalot.com. You can also, I'm on Twitter at BenRoy00. Also, if you want to see something funny, go to funnierdie.com/TheGrolix, and you can watch our web series and my band. You can check out my band Spells. Which is just a rock and roll band. And you can find
I've heard some good stuff coming out. I've been on your webpage. You put up some new stuff just recently.
Yeah, and it's coming out great, and that's doing real well. And you can check that out at spellsrules.bandcamp.com.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing the podcast. You know, I'd love to do it again. I actually had several questions that I never even got around to asking you because this is what basically I love about podcasts. You just sit here and
just bullshit.
Spill your guts.
Yeah, I love it, man. And this was great. Thanks for having me.
We'll do it again. All right, Ben. Thanks. See ya.